Welcome, everyone, to these Goldster podcasts, where we take you behind the scenes with guests of all shades and styles to hear enriching stories about their lives, their victories, their failures, their dreams, and, of course, their books. I'm Humphrey Hawksley, your host for the duration, and today we're talking about healthy living. Please enjoy. To find out more, check us out on www.goldster.co.uk. And without further ado, let us begin. Hello, everybody. It's great to be here live and in person. And you have your virtual counterparts that are listening in and watching this as well. So we've got a great community with us. And this is a very special Goldster Inside story because it's our first from this splendid Riverstone Theatre at Kensington, heart of London. And our conversation is going to be focused on the theme of aging. Not about getting old, run down and slow, but the joy at this stage of life and how to ride through it. And my guest is going to take us through 8 steps of how to do it brilliantly. My name is Humphrey Hawksley. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. You can ask me anything. Just raise your hand, or as those virtually with us, put it in the chat. Ask my guest anything. This is a Goldster conversation. We all talk to each other and we can say anything we want and see what happens. Now, anyone over 30 should slip this little book, this insightful tome, into how to age joyfully into their back pocket. It is filled with tips and wisdom and emblazoned with quotes from Mahatma Gandhi, who says, "The future depends on what you do today." And that's very true. But also then from the American sex symbol, remember her, Mae West, who says, "You only live once." That's true as well. And Judi Dench, we all know her, wrote the foreword saying, "Anyone who knows me is aware that the word retire is not mentioned in my house." That is quite enough for me. It is time to meet our elegant, non-retiring and joyful guest, the great Maggie Piggott. Come in, Maggie. Oh, lovely. Send me a little dance technique, sir.
Oh, well, hey.
Brilliant.
It's lovely to see you all.
Now, there's a contradiction, a confusion I have, Maggie, in that we have Judi Dench, who you put there saying retire is not me. But you did retire, didn't you? You ran the justice system once.
Actually, that's slightly overstating it.
I think it was a bit of overstatement.
A position in what was the Ministry of Justice. And before that, because I spent nearly 40 years as a civil servant in its predecessors, it started off as the Lord Chancellor's Department and various different jobs over my 37 years in the department. But I did then retire earlier than I wanted because I fell ill. I would have liked to have gone on because I loved my job and I love working, and I was job sharing with another mum.
So. You pioneered that, didn't you? You weren't just a justice department clerk taking the records in the court. You were hiring and firing people, and
yes, more or less.
Firing judges.
Our last job, we were lucky enough to be the chief executive officer, job share for the judicial training organisation, training 40,000 judges. So we had a budget of 11 million and 70 staff. And we did it as a job share. And when we started, like back in 1978, we were the first job sharers, I think, in the civil service. And it was sort of unheard of, job sharing. But it was a passion of mine that if I ever, ever had children, I did not want to work full time. It was one of my top goals in life that I would want to have some time at home with my children, partly because I had a mother who was also a civil servant, who was a complete workaholic, and we hardly saw her, which was wonderful when I was a teenager. I have to tell you, you know, all my friends said, "God, you're so lucky to have a mother who believes in benign neglect because you could do what you want."
That's a word of the 60s, benign neglect.
But I wanted to be there for the kids, so I wanted to work part-time.
So your passion about this job show is really interesting, and you mentioned was 78. So you went right through your career with couple to somebody else.
Yes.
And you both got promoted at the same time.
Absolutely. We did 7 different jobs together. We moved around the department in these 7 jobs. We went for interviews and got promoted together. They didn't know how to interview us because they'd never interviewed a couple for a job share. We had to work it out because when we started right back in the day, there were no policies, there was no guidelines. We literally just made it up as we went along because nobody else had done it. But it was an amazing, amazing way to work. And I absolutely loved it because unlike working part-time, which I also did before I job shared, you didn't feel guilty. If you work 3 days a week, I think it's so hard on the days that you're not working. You think about it, you're worried what's going on, you're dumping on other people to cover. But with a job share, I could go off on Wednesday evening, think, great, from Thursday to Sunday, I'm looking after the kids. I can forget about the work because it's in Judith's hands. I don't need to worry. She won't disturb me. I can enjoy my other life. And I would recommend it as the best way of having worked full-time, part-time, and job share.
You said that you were interviewed together. Did you interview people together when they were applying for jobs?
Yeah, well, yes, we did. I mean, obviously, we recruited staff. We sometimes had to, one of us, take the lead share because it could be a bit intimidating having appraisals or interviewing two-headed. So sometimes one of us would take the lead or the other. But yes, we both had to be happy with the stuff we recruited.
And then you got a job share gong. You went to the palace, didn't you, and got named or knighted.
Well, don't say. It was a great honour, totally unexpected, that when I retired, we were each of us given a CBE, which was amazing, partly for the work we'd done in the administration of justice, but also because over the 20 years, we job shared for 23 years, but over those years, we'd done an awful lot to promote flexible working, research and training and mentoring and helping train managers who were doing it. So we got the honour partly for that as well. So it was lovely. And I became a vice patron of a wonderful charity called Working Families, which is the leading flexible working charity in the country, and helped them and still am, actually.
So now I want to get into the nub of our thing. Well, we've got your highly achieving professional life, but you said you didn't want to leave, but you got sick. Had to leave. Tell us about that transition.
Well, it was very, very hard at the time because, as I say, I loved my job. I didn't need to retire, but when I was about 59, I retired, and I had intended to go on working for at least another few years, but I was advised to give up because I developed an autoimmune disease. I have a wonderful capacity for acquiring autoimmune diseases. I don't know if this audience knows about autoimmune diseases.
Tell us in a nutshell.
But I acquire a new one every decade. I think I'm up to number 5 now of autoimmune diseases. Once you get one, you seem to start collecting them. So I got one of those, and I really wasn't terribly well. And I was advised to retire, and I gave up. And it was a really, really difficult time because I went from holding down a job with barcode diary of meetings. I got purpose out of my job. I had better friends. I got stimulation, money. And it was a real shock to suddenly wake up in the morning and find a completely empty diary. What do I do today? And you're not feeling well either. And it really was difficult. And in fact, I suffered a period of really being quite low as to, well, what am I going to do? I could live for another 30, 40 years. And what am I going to do with my life now when I'm not working and I'm not able to work?
And how long did that low period last, would you say?
Well, it took me about 9 or 10 months after I retired to start feeling more human and better able to do things and not suffering from the fatigue and all the other symptoms I had. So, that was
quite a long time. A long period. And this is what we're going to talk, because your book, How to Age Joyfully, 8 Steps to a Happier and Fuller Life, we are talking about moving on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Almost inevitable. I think we've all gone through changes in our lives, and we all know that, the time's wing chariot, as I say, creeps up on us. And this is, and we're going to talk about how best to handle it. But before we do that, as I said, any questions on anything that we're saying, just put your hand up and we will Oh, we have one now. Just wait 2 seconds until there's one other thing and then I bring it. And secondly, we have a little competition in Goldster. So Maggie is of a certain youthful generation and joyful generation. She has a favorite song from her era. What is your favorite song? Put it in the chat or tell us if you want, and see if you can guess as Maggie talks what her favorite song might be. It is a famous song. I've checked it. It's not one of these obscure things.
Very famous.
If you can speak loudly.
Sure. Is it the name of Chef Joff? Or did you feel bad for Joff?
Very interesting question.
Can we just repeat that? Yes.
When I left the job, did it remain a shared job or did it go back to being one person? Well, it was very interesting. And one of the worst things about giving up the job was the guilt I felt, because obviously Judith, my job sharer, had a choice to either go full time and cover the other half, but she didn't want to do that. Or find another job sharer. And that would have been really, really difficult at the level that we were to find somebody else. So in fact, she decided to retire too. And they recruited a full timer and she overlapped with her. And then she retired about 5 months after I retired. And actually she was 2 or 3 years younger than me. So that was even more difficult, because in a way I always felt that I'd slightly imposed that on her, and that if it hadn't been for me, she would have gone on, or we would have gone on. So it was difficult, but it went back to a full-timer.
That's interesting. You had a bit of the guilt and the...
Yeah,
everything
it was
thrown in there.
Mind you, she got grandchildren fairly soon after and things, so...
Just generally, before we move on to the 8 steps, does it this sort of thing hit us all at some stage? You have empty nesting when the children use it. People get divorced, they lose loved ones, they lose the job, they get sick. Is it a sort of generic element in our lives that we...
I think life is about change. At every single stage, it's about change. And I think if one doesn't accept that life is going to change when you leave school, when you get a career, when you start looking after parents or children, and then when you give up working, that you're always going to have a stage in life, another stage in life. And I think that's all a part about trying to adapt to making the best of what this new stage is, and dealing with it in the best way possible and embracing it for what it is, because it's not going to be the same as what it was before. Maybe better, maybe worse, but...
Yeah, older, you don't have the confidence of youth, but you have the wisdom of age.
Absolutely. And there is this thing called the U-curve of happiness, which I only discovered when I was researching for the book, that actually, as people get older, and it'd be interesting to see if people here agree with it, as you get older, you get happier. The U-curve is you start off happy as a child, then you have this slump. And when you're at midlife, that's your low point, because you're quite often, career, children, parents, making a name for yourself. And so in your mid-50s, you're at the bottom of the U. And then as you get it past that, you start getting happier and you go on getting happier. And this is globally based research that there is this thing exists. And I certainly have found that myself.
If you feel that you're the happiest stage of your life now, put up a hand. No,
you need to read the book. You need to read the book.
We have a very honest answer. Now we have some guesses on your favorite thing. Geeta says, we're not going to tell you, Geeta, whether this is right or wrong or anybody, When I'm 64, yeah. Actually, favorite song.
I like that.
Marcy says, Let's Dance by David Bowie.
Oh, I love that too.
Jill B says, Let It Be. Celia says, Things Could Only Get Better.
Oh, that's great. Gosh, those are really, really good choices, actually. They're not right. But
and Lillette has a nice sort of anecdote here. I don't know. It's got some emojis with it. While I was working, my husband made me a cup of tea every morning. The day I stopped working, he stopped making me the tea. Aww. Oh, goodness. That's something, isn't it?
Oh.
This stage of life that we're sort of talking about, I'm hearing this word about living with conditions, which don't seem to be a sort of illness, don't seem to be, what is a condition? Have you had?
Well, I think, per se, as you age, that people do develop chronic or long-term conditions or diseases. I think they may be the same thing in some cases. But I don't think it's an issue about aging, because I subscribe to Professor Muir Gray, who I know is connected with Goldster, who says that actually aging does not impact on you until you're in your 90s. So anything before then is because of luck, genes, circumstances, how you live your life. And some people are lucky and some people are not. I've had a really bad 6 months, I have to own up, in the last 6 months, but developing three conditions or diseases for which I'm now on such a raft of pills, 16 pills a day I'm now currently taking. 16, yes. It's not been the ideal last 6 months, but hey. Getting better, I hope.
And you say, or give us a nutshell of what?
Yeah, I developed something which actually I had never heard of, but some people listening may know. It's another autoimmune disease called polymyalgia rheumatica, or PMR, and apparently it's relatively common, particularly in the demographic of women, and particularly from the age of about 70. And it's a sort of inflammation of muscles or blood vessels. I don't think they really know what it is, but it really laid me low. I suddenly woke up gradually and started feeling like I had aged about 35 years and I couldn't really get up the stairs or walk very far or get out of a chair. And as I danced before that about four times a week, it was quite noticeable. Anyway, after a long story short,
Better now? But you're on the 16 pills a day.
Well, I had to go on steroids, which I wouldn't recommend. But the steroids have been amazing in getting rid of the inflammation, the pain, the stiffness, the aches.
You did a nice quick step coming in here. I noticed that little dance.
Sadly, I've had to give up dancing over the last few months, which is a real loss to me, because dancing is a huge part of my life, later life. But the steroids are doing a brilliant job, but they don't cure the disease. They just get rid of the symptoms.
And these conditions, they're with you for life, or they disappear? And
well, hopefully this one will burn out eventually. They don't know quite how long it will take, but eventually, hopefully it will go. And one of the others I've got apparently is long-term, but it's fine. I'm on a wonderful pill for that, and that's sorting it out. And then I'm on other pills because of the other pills I'm on. So pills for my bones, because they're affected by the steroids. So one thing leads to another. I'm not a great fan of medication, I have to say, but it's done magic.
You do need the substance. Yeah. Geeta says, very just sorry to hear that, Maggie. Hope you're going to feel better.
Oh, thank you.
She's looking great, I've got to say, Geeta. And you can see, has anybody's got any stories to tell, comments about this thing of conditions, which I think we're hearing more in the language, aren't
we? Yeah.
As something that people are living.
And people are living longer.
Yes.
It's only natural that people are going to develop more things as you live longer, whether it's heart disease, cancers, or whatever. Yeah. It's inevitable. I mean,
yes, that's
eventually.
I want to move on to the 8 steps. Because we have had our change of life, our empty nesting, our change of jobs. We've had the conditions. Everybody's got a different set of life that we have. But we have 8 steps to, to not counter it, it's to live with it, is to
help you make the most of your life. I mean,
yes. And the first one you have is move.
Yeah. Well, I think this is probably the most important. And by move, I don't mean move house, but I mean physical activity, move your body. And I think that that probably is the best gift that you can give yourself at any age, but certainly as one gets older. It's been called by the NHS the miracle cure. And I think it really, really is. And if you look at the evidence of what physical activity can do for you, I mean, it reduces early mortality. It helps your physical state, your mental state. It improves sleep. It improves every aspect of your life and can make the difference between in later life being a dependent or independent. So in the book, I have certain tips about what you can do, but it's really important, I would think, to just try and move a bit more than you're doing and to increase that all the time.
You use the word move. I think, you know, you see the word exercise. Mm. Well, is this a difference or is it the same thing?
Yeah, well, some people like exercise. I'm not sure if that's what you enjoy doing, going to a gym. I'm afraid I'm not a gym person.
But it's dancing exercise.
Yes, well, dancing is a form of exercise. Yes. Dancing is the best form of exercise you can do. And I recommend everybody to take up dancing because it does everything. It works all your body, but also it helps you mentally. There is the most amazing research that I also found when I was researching for the book, that if you dance regularly 2 or 3 times a week, say, and you are learning new steps, so you're not doing the same old every single time, so it's automatic, you reduce the risk of getting dementia by 76%. It is the highest ranking thing you can do for yourself is dancing because it engages the brain as well as the body.
And also you're sort of engaging somebody else too, aren't
exactly.
you?
So you have to- you've got to be aware of other people. You're also interacting with the music. You're having to learn the steps. And it's social, which we'll come on to, which is hugely important. So it ticks all the boxes. It helps your balance. It helps your aerobic strength. It helps your flexibility. So it really is wonderful. So what I would say is if you can find it, and there are so many different dances. I've tried everything from Argentine tango, which was my passion, to literally I've done a bit of hip hop. I discovered ballet in my 60s. I've done contemporary, a bit of flamenco. The two things I really want to do next when I get better is musical theatre, because I'd love to.
And it's time to give our audience two things. Well, one is to you, our audience, a hint. What sort of dance would you do to your favourite song that we're going to name it?
I would just move. I would just move. Any old way you can.
That's a good enough hint, I think. It's one of those songs that you can just move to.
Disco or whatever. Disco.
Anybody here in our wonderful audience do dancing in the way that Meg has described?
You should.
Or anybody thinking of taking up, I don't know what Riverstone's dancing curriculum is, but we can check it out. But yeah. The next one after this is, and we had Salima Ahmed at Riverstone in Fulham, who was telling it's Eat Right. And Salima is a gastroenterologist.
Okay. Well, I'm sure everybody knows here the importance of eating the right foods in the right quantities. There's so much, especially now actually, about having a healthy diet and the dangers of ultra processed food, particularly that seems to be in the news a lot at the moment, isn't it? And I think that having a healthy diet again affects everything. So it's the guidelines of avoiding salt, sugar, reducing especially saturated fat, limiting alcohol, and trying to have a plant-based diet. There's this blue zones, which are 5 areas in the world where people live the longest, and they follow very much a sort of Mediterranean diet, which is advocated, which is, you know, lots of fruit and veg and plant-based. So that's really...
And just to explain to me, because you're now seeing in the shops the free-from shelves, which is gluten-free. What are these things? Are they connected to aging, or are they just things that...
I don't think they're necessarily connected to aging. In fact, I have to be gluten-free. That was one of the things that happened about when I fell ill, that I found when I gave up gluten, that helped my recovery hugely. And in fact, my son has celiac disease, which is he can't have gluten for the rest of his life. But lots of people sort of give up things because it could be a... just because they want to. It's not necessarily good for you. I mean, I think having a balanced diet is the most important.
And something, because Celia said she's dead against diets.
Yeah,
she says, totally. You too?
Totally. I mean, I think these fad diets, as I say in the book, they're unsustainable. They're really not good for you. I really don't think, and you can't keep them up. I mean, anybody who does any of these diets, they usually go back to putting on the weight again and some after they've given them up. It's really, really... Yeah.
Okay, so no diet
not good.
Makes you feel good.
Just a healthy diet, eating perhaps smaller portions. One of the tips in the book, which I found really good because I have been higher weight than I am at the moment, is if you want to eat less or would you, is just have your main meal on a smaller plate, on a dessert plate, because then it looks so much more. And you think, oh, my plate is really full, but it's just a smaller plate.
So that's the optics.
Yeah, but
optics of your stomach.
And also to stop eating before you're full, because it takes 20 minutes for the brain to register that you're full. Yeah. So if you actually, by the end of the meal, you say, oh, God, I'm really full, you've probably overeaten, and we do tend to overeat.
So the moving and the eating. We have another guest for your favorite song.
Oh yeah,
it is Dancing Queen by ABBA. Yes, Dancing Queen by ABBA. I'm not going to say whether anybody has got it right or not yet, because we want more songs.
Yeah,
I mean, so
they're all great. Though, so I'm going to make a play. I'm going to take these down and make a playlist of this lot.
They are. Geeta, I think we said that Geeta thinks you look wonderful. We've answered this a bit, but seriously, does exercise help you to recover from your conditions, and what physical exercise routine helps you? Dance?
Well, I mean, at the moment, I've been told that for PMR, rest, and don't overdo it. Pace yourself, you know, don't do too much, because I'm the sort of person, the minute I feel better, I rush back and try and do it, and then the next day I suffer for it. So I try and pace myself. So at the moment, I'm trying to restrict myself to brisk walking, and I have, you know, Fitbit and this wonderful app called Active 10, which I recommend. It's an NHS app. I think actually Muir Gray started it, which actually tells you not only how many minutes you walk, but how many of those minutes are brisk, and the guidelines recommend 30 minutes of brisk walking a day.
That raises the heart rate,
yeah,
doesn't it?
So at the moment, that's the only exercise. I'm going to try and do a bit of Pilates soon and see how that goes, because I love that. And then gently get back into dance, I hope.
Well, I mean, you had a thing, as I said, as you came in. We have two more. We have another one. I love Mary's guest. Maggie May is your favourite song.
Yeah.
Step number three, have a purpose.
Yes. Now, purpose, again, is one of, I think, my top four, with eating, diet, purpose, and the next one. And this is something that the Center for Aging Better, which is a wonderful organization, they discover four things that you need for a successful later life. And having a goal, having a purpose is one of them. And this is absolutely crucial. It has been found that having a reason to get up in the morning, something to live for, the Japanese call it ikigai, is absolutely vital for a good later life. So otherwise, you know, you just sort of what's it all about? But having something that drives you, and that can be anything. It can be your work. For most, a lot of people, it's their job. And yes. I would say if you enjoy working, keep on doing it if you can. But it could be volunteering. For me, certainly since I gave up paid work, volunteering has been
a reason to get. I would like to hear feedback from our virtual audience, from anybody here, of what, apart from to come and see Maggie, why you got out of bed this morning, and whether you can, I mean, could we set ourselves projects, goals?
Absolutely.
We have to.
And that's one of the tips in the book, that try to have goals, long-term, short-term goals, whatever it is, something that you're working towards that you're trying to achieve.
This is different for when you were working, or most of us are working, we have a boss telling us that we have to be at a certain time, we have to meet so and so. That all goes away.
Yeah, exactly.
You're your own boss.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have objectives then, and you're praised against them if you're employed, or if you're self-employed, you have your own targets and your goals. And that all goes if you then give up.
Yes.
So I think you have to discover something that you enjoy, even if it's only, I've taken up sculpture. I'm hopeless. Just like I'm hopeless at dancing, but you know, try to get better at it, trying to achieve something, try to achieve getting something out of a lump of clay. Well, it could be small, but it gives you that satisfaction.
So just to go back, you've got the, you know, the empty nesting we talked about, those changes in life, the kids wanting something, suddenly they're gone. And then the boss suddenly gone.
I'd often come back. I have
The children or the boss?
The children. Daughter is going to be moving back home when they bought their house and have all the renovation work. So they don't always go and stay gone.
So we've covered purpose. We have. I want more guesses of Maggie's favourite song, because we had Maggie May was the last one. Connect.
Yes, that's the top four. Social connections. And again, that has been shown to be vital. They, in fact, again, there was some research done that showed that if you lack good social connections, strong relationships, it's as bad for your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. I mean, I was just staggered by that. And that's why organizations like Goldstone, Riverstone, or whatever, making friends, keeping up friends, sustaining relationships, making new friends, is so important as we get older, because otherwise you get isolated, and social isolation and loneliness is really, really not advisable. So there was a Harvard study, a 75-year study, and a large number of people, and they found the most important thing in keeping people healthy as they got older was those having strong social connections and relationships with other people.
On the meeting new people element, we covered this actually in a Goldster a few weeks back, but that fear when you go into a room where you know nobody and you suddenly think, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to meet all these people, you know, and I don't have a promotion to get or something to get. How do you get over that?
Yeah, well, that's hard. And some people I do find that very difficult. I love talking to people. I love meeting people. So for me, I'm very lucky that I just get great joy out of
a natural extrovert.
Well, I am. But I know it can be very difficult. But I think that most people are not that way. And I think if you think that most people are probably as shy and as nervous and feeling alone as you are, and that they would really, really welcome it if you go up to somebody and just say, hello, oh, I know nobody here, you know, who are you? That they really welcome it. I mean, and I think just talking to anybody, I'm a great one for talking to other people. Ladies lose in theatres. I mean, oh my gosh. Everybody queuing silently for hours and hours for the two ladies lose. It just, if you just turn to your neighbor and you say, oh, are you enjoying the show? And then you chat, and then, you know, you've got about five people having this conversation. It's really great. And it lifts your spirits. It really does make a difference. And they find that that does make a difference. So if you're in a bus queue or whatever, just commenting on something and striking up a conversation, can you don't know what it's going to lead to, but you can lead people.
And if you do that, and if you go and mix like we're all mixing today, that's like not smoking 15 cigarettes a day,
exactly.
as opposed to staying at home watching television.
Yeah, although I think it's having that. What's really good is having strong relationships with people that you can rely on and depend on. I mean, casual relationships and lots of friends and things are good. But I think it's actually building those
small
strong people that you can call on, that can give you support, can help you when times are rough.
Lillette Butler says, this is going back to having a purpose. I get out of bed to help my mother who has advanced Alzheimer's. Yeah. I also do volunteer work, and she does Gold Star art classes.
Oh,
so there's reasons for getting out of
everything.
Karen Tyndall's restorative yoga is great for the vagus nerve. Does that ring a bell with you, Maggie? It can help autoimmune system rest, relax, restore, and renew.
Thank you.
Finding it helpful for loss of being a carer, which caused turmoil, now to find a new life and purpose. Thank you. You are amazing and inspirational. And Anne Saunders has got, I like this one, a guess for your favourite song, So Far Away by Carole King.
Oh, you know, I never heard that one.
That's going on your playlist.
Oh, that's it.
Can anybody sing that?
No. I love Carole King.
Next one, Grow.
Grow, yes. And that's not growing vegetables, but growing your mind. This is all about lifelong learning, because, again, it has been shown that if you stay curious, if you're open to new experiences, if you exercise your brain, that helps reduce the risk of developing dementia, but it also it improves everything. There's this thing called neuroplasticity and making new connections in your brain, and the phrase use it or lose it applies just as much to your mind as it does to your body. So if you want to stay young, doing new things, being curious about the world, being involved in the world, taking up new hobbies, new activities, two things that are extremely good, they've found, is learning a new language and learning a musical instrument. I haven't done either of those myself, but
these really exercise, stretch them.
They really do.
It's like taking your brain to the gym.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But anything that you can do, I mean, crosswords, whatever, every little helps. But just being engaged in life, I think, is just so important.
And going out of your comfort zone.
Yes. Trying new things. Absolutely.
Where you might fail sort of where you think that you are too old to fail, because you go somewhere where you do fail.
And then you try again, and then you find you can do it, and that gives you such a buzz. So dancing. You can try dancing.
Dancing, which is musical instrument. Number six, be grateful.
Yes. Yeah. Gratitude, again, has been shown to do all sorts of things for one's mind and body and spirit. It's been shown that if you can appreciate what you have in life, it improves your mental health, obviously. And one of the things one can do, because sometimes it's hard to find things to be grateful for. And there's a very good tip, which I discovered, which is to start a gratitude journal. Because if you think, life is all grim and, I've got nothing to live for and it's all very hard. If you start this gratitude journal, which is just noting down three things every evening that you're grateful for that day. And it doesn't have to be big things. It can be just like, I read a nice article, or I had a lovely cup of coffee, or I spent somebody on the
coffee, I was going to say. I could be grateful for that.
Exactly. The weather's nice. Yeah. And if you write those down consistently, it has been found that after a few weeks, it really changes your mindset, and it can actually make you feel better and improve your mood. So
as we're talking about that, it just sort of struck me, we're hearing an awful lot at the moment about mental health.
Mm.
Is this, are we now discussing improving mental health?
And just being thankful for the small things in life. I think lockdown was amazing in that respect, that because we were forced into ourselves and we had to sort of find things more in the home, everybody started talking, didn't they, about birdsong and walks in the park and everything, which they hadn't really sort of focused on before, and getting pleasure out of smaller things in life and appreciating what they had. And I think appreciating what you've got rather than moaning about what you haven't got. I mean, I've certainly found that it's taken a bit of a time in the last few months.
So your brain, you've managed to turn your brain around. You look very sort of upbeat and...
It's work in progress. But, I mean, when I first had to give up dancing, I was really upset. And thought, why me? You know, all this. And then you think, well, yeah, but I can still do this. I can still do that. I can still enjoy a good film.
Just take us through that again, because it's your own personal, and you do look so completely upbeat and happy at the moment. But the I read a PMR that you had that really struck you.
Yeah,
down.
I
mean, just... And then you've now recovered.
Well, I've recovered insofar as I couldn't dance because it was so painful. And now, especially as I had a steroid injection last week in my hip, which has been amazing. Now I don't get pain, although if I do too much, I find. But the PMR, the steroids haven't cured it. So I still suffer from the fatigue. And if I do too much in the day, I have to go home and go to bed or do nothing the next day. So
your gratitude journal is all that happened. Yeah, you struggle to find a top line?
Well, I think there's always something. And I know some people object to this. Oh, there's always somebody worse off than you are. But actually, I do think, when I hear from friends of what they're going through, some friends, close friends, and I think, well, you know, how lucky one is if one can actually get up in the morning and talk to people and do things. You know, one should really be appreciative of being able to get up, breathe, be still alive and be here.
We've got some other notes in here. Suri sent a direct message to me, but Suri, I'm going to tell everybody about it because Maggie and I were discussing this before we go, and we would not reveal, but you would reveal. How old is Maggie? I wonder. She looks very young.
Oh, that's very nice. Well, I've recently, in June, I became 72. But this is what 72 looks like or can look like.
I recently, Suri, this is on the mind. I recently started doing Wordle and Sudoku in the New York Times. You do Wordle?
Wordle.
Anybody here does Wordle?
Yeah.
Oh,
isn't it amazing? Do you do Quirtle?
Oh,
Quirtle.
What's Quirtle?
Quirtle's even better. Quirtle is a foursome Wordle. Oh, I can't explain.
What about Spelling Bee?
I don't know.
That's with the New York Times as well. Sorry, you did Spelling Bee.
If you like Wordle, try Quirtle. That's really good. It takes a bit longer than Wordle, but...
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Jean Joyce, goals for art classes certainly engage your brain. Meeting friends, catching up with someone you haven't seen for a while, it makes you feel good. So that's all of that.
Absolutely.
All of that stuff.
Friends are so important.
Before I do the next one, I'm going to tell everybody and everybody out there that we have not yet got Maggie's favorite song. So those of you that took a first guess, take a second guess and let's try and get it before the end. Lillette loves Wordle. Oh, Jill B, Wordle is wonderful. Recommend. Yeah. There we go.
Great.
Be grateful. Give.
Yes.
Is number 7.
Yes, give. And that is both giving to other people, because again, there's research that shows that people who give to others benefit themselves as much as the recipient benefits. So this is around giving what you can, and it doesn't have to be shed loads of money. It can be something tiny or your time, again, like volunteering. I'm a, I'm involved in various charities, but it can be something tiny, like just phoning somebody up and offering to do something with them, or helping in whatever way you can, giving in on a bigger compass. One of the things I want to try and give is to try and reframe aging and try and help older people as much as I can through the charity Open Age that I'm involved with.
Reframe, just expand on that a bit. How do you reframe aging?
There is so ageism. Don't get me. That's a whole nother hour.
All right.
But ageism is pernicious, and there's too much of it around, from wrinkly hands and ageist birthday cards, and the way older people and employment and the media and how invisibility as people get older. And I think we need to change all that. I mean, personally, I would. I think we need new role models. I've just volunteered to become a champion for the Center for Aging Better. They're recruiting champions because they're starting a new huge ageism campaign. And I've become an age activist trustee for another wonderful arts coalition charity called Flourishing Lives, which is all about how to help older people get the best out of life and health and well-being. And I think there's a lot that needs to be done to counter ageism that exists. It's getting better, but there's a long way to go.
So if somebody like yourself that looks around 35, you can do it quite. Before we do the final one, we have some more guesses coming in, and then I'm going to go to the audience for some guesses. And then we have Staying Alive by the Bee Gees.
Oh, I love that.
I Left My Heart in San Francisco from Christine. Anne is Staying Alive. Gita has two songs, I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor and Flashdance, What a Feeling.
Oh, I love that.
And Christine D, Save the Last Dance. Anybody here got any guess? Yes?
Oh,
by way of Frank Sinatra.
Like that.
Any others?
Dance with Superstition.
Oh, yeah, I love that too. This is a really good playlist here, isn't it?
With the Irish playlist. My Way Superstition. Any more? Any more before we move on to the last of the eight steps? Last of the eight steps, I completely disagree with. Be positive. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. It really connects with all the others. And that's having a positive attitude to life and particularly to aging. And again, there is research, which I was amazed about, research that shows that those people who have a positive attitude to life and aging, on average, live an extra 7.5 years. It is that powerful. So, and the other thing is the optimism, because a lot of people say, oh, I'm not an optimistic person, but only 25% of optimism is inherited. So the 75% to play for, that you can actually improve your attitude and approach to life. And in the book, I've got 22 tips on how you can go about doing that.
Give me an example of a situation where you have a positive view that can extend your life, and then a sort of neutral or negative view.
Some people
are
just, well, yes. I mean, just on everyday things, you meet some people, I don't know, and they're always negative about anything, you know, the weather or this, or they're complaining, or they always see the glass half empty side of things. And you can have exactly the same person who will just approach it from the other way around, or turn it round and see the positive aspects. And that you can usually find something positive. Sometimes it takes work that you've got to think. And I've had my bad days, believe it, when I really thought that it's very hard to maintain a positive attitude in life. And I've had bad years. I went through when my husband had a stroke, and that was a really bad year, and it was very hard to stay positive, and I didn't succeed altogether. And I totally accept that it can be very, very difficult. But you can actually, by trying to associate with people who actually do lift your spirits and who you can laugh with, doing things that make you smile. I'm a great believer now in not watching television programs that depress me and are violent and nasty. I mean, why? I mean, even giving up watching the news because it's just so depressing. But going to see, I went to see the Barbie film every day.
Wonderful.
Have you seen the ABBA?
No, I'll get to that. I must go to that, actually.
You have to dance to that.
I know. Dancing's, I my daughter dances that. My husband's not a girl.
But when you say that, there's also that a sort of line of argument. Somebody will come up to you and say, you mustn't, you know, suppress your grief or you mustn't exactly. do that. So how do you balance those two out?
I think it's, you can't be relentlessly positive. I think what I'd say is be realistic. And sometimes life is difficult. And sometimes it's hard, and sometimes there isn't much to be positive about. And I totally accept that. Some people are very unlucky. I consider myself, despite everything, to have been extremely fortunate in my life. And I know that an awful lot of people are not so fortunate, whether through their genes or their financial circumstances, through deprivation, through their life chances. And I know, and I have met many, and it is hard. And I don't think one should be positive relentlessly and over the top because that's unrealistic and it's not sustainable.
Yes, I think Linda Shaw, a neuroscientist who we had on the show about a year ago, said we can't all be Tigger all the time.
You can't. Yeah. You can't. And some people are life's genuine ails. My husband, one.
I just wanted to tell you, because you said, you know, your husband had a stroke and all that, and then you come to the conditions you told us about there, and the years pass. Do we get more experienced, more used to these things, or do they hit us?
I don't know. I think it probably varies from person to person. I suppose, I think people, as they get older, probably become more grateful for what they have and what they can still do. And more accepting and get more pleasure out of, I don't know, well, that you may disagree, but get more pleasure out of what they can still do. And they don't have perhaps so many pressures on them. But
it's a learning gap, isn't it?
You get more experienced at dealing with what life throws at you. And hopefully you get better able to cope. But I wouldn't say that necessarily applies to everybody.
Now we're going to tell our wonderful audience here and about what is coming up next on Goldster. We are then going to reveal your favourite song. And so anybody's got any thoughts on the favourite song, just put it in the chat or...
Proud Mary,
Tina Turner is one of my favourite. I saw Tina Turner, the O2, when she was 70. And oh my goodness, that was the most incredible experience. I love Tina Turner.
Your playlist is getting better and better, isn't it?
It is.
Right. Now we have tomorrow. It's tomorrow, July the 28th. It is. Lucinda is hosting Book of the Month. That's with Sally Vickers, the gardener, an artist and her sister by a rundown Jacobean house on the Welsh marshes. And it all unfolds from there. August the 1st, I'm on Purpose, Passion and Grit with Doug Lawrence and his book, You Are Not Alone. It's a journey through his own struggle with mental health and that sort of thing coming out at the other end. August the 3rd, I'm with Dan Cazetta, a chemical weapons expert, and his book, Toxic, A History of Nerve Agents from Nazi Germany to Putin's Russia. He's also been in the news lately because he was blacklisted by the government from speaking at their conferences because he tweeted something against the government some years back, and that blacklist has now been lifted. It was quite a controversial thing. He was also on our show last night. We did An Author to Author last night with Charles Cumming, the great spy writer, and Dan was one of his research targets. So what a small world we live in. August the 4th. I'm with Dr. Elizabeth Ekstrom, and her book is called The Gift of Aging.
I've heard about this. Yes, I'm going to read it. Yeah.
Yes, she's a specialist in Portland, Oregon, so we have a special time at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. August 24th, I'm with Harry Bucknell, who is an adventurer, an author, and a walker. He's just done thousands of miles around the United Kingdom and has written a book called A Road for All Seasons. So it's a reason for him to get up in the morning. Yeah. His tent doesn't get blown down. Yes. And my book of the month on August the 25th, after stiff democratic competition in Gloucester, is The Bullet That Missed by Richard Osman. The runner-up to that in our huge focus group was The Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad. And that's going to be the next book of the month. Which one would you have picked there, Maggie?
I'm afraid I'm lowbrow here. I would read the Richard Osman, but I haven't read The Bullet That Missed. I bought it, actually, but I have read his other ones. And I do think he writes well. They're fun. I like light-hearted books. Again, my daughter was trying to get me to read A Little Life. I don't know if you've heard about A Little Life, but I just said I just can't face 600 pages of grimness. So and the older I get, the more my books, films, TV have all got to be joyful.
A few more comments, questions coming in from our virtual audience. Geeta says, could you chair dance, Maggie? I sometimes do it on a sofa or at a meal.
Yeah, absolutely. You can wheelchair dance. In fact, I'm an ambassador. One of the things for Paradance UK, which is the wheelchair dancing association. And there are global competitions in wheelchair dancing. And I intend to dance with a stick in a wheelchair, whatever. I'm going to get back there. There are classes in chair dancing.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
Absolutely.
And Jean Joy says, it is essential to be positive. I've just come back from 6 weeks in Spain and I'll be back there again in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. After I lost my husband, everyone thought I would give up our holiday home and stay home. No chance.
Good.
That's a good one. Geeta thinks you're simply the best. What is the NHS app that you mentioned?
Oh, it's called Active 10. I really recommend it. I use the Fitbit app as well, but Active 10 is really good. And I look at it most days to see whether I've done my at least 30 minutes of brisk walking a day.
That's it. Actually, Geeta answered that question. I thought Active 10 might have been your favorite tune. So that shows how out of touch I am with things. Gillian says, totally agree with all 8 steps. Look at what you can do, not at what you can't do. I chair dance.
Okay.
She says, that's good. And Karen Kendall says, we are on a joy diet.
Oh.
Do you know the joy diet? No, we don't know the joy. Now, the time has come. If anybody's got any last one, we do have a winner.
We do have a winner.
Does anybody want to put in a last thought to be a joint winner? No. No, they're all terrified of it. Geeta, you have won.
Yeah.
It is.
I will survive by Gloria Gaynor. So it's been my mantra, really, for most of my life. Although Dancing Queen by ABBA is just a smidgen below it, I have to say. But I will survive by Gloria Gaynor.
Now,
never fail.
We've got 15 seconds. I want you just to sum up how to live joyfully. 2 or 3 words.
Oh, gosh. I think I would sum it up as live, love, laugh, and dance.
Live, love, laugh, and dance. What a great message. That's it. The clock ticketh and time's winged chariot is upon us. And Maggie is being summoned now. You have a reason to get up in the morning because you're going to sign books outside to mark Gloucester's inaugural show at Kensington Rivington Stone and sign over. Until tomorrow with Lucinda and the Gardener. Stay safe, stay curious, stay involved, stay joyful. Joyful. And of course, stay Gloucester and stay Riverstone. Tell your friends, enemies, and families to join us at our great Gloucester Riverstone conversations. Thank you so much, Maggie Pickett, for showing us how to start.
And thank all of you. Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Humphrey.
Thank you for listening. And find out our vast range on www.gloucester.co.uk. Our vision is to help people stay stimulated, active, socializing, and empowered in what we say live happier and healthier for longer. The podcast is one of many strands, which includes nutrition, yoga, art, singing, languages, brain power, love, and many, many others, more than 300, all from the comfort of your home. If you like what you hear, please press that big subscribe button and tell your friends, family, colleagues, community, and yes, your enemies too, about what Gloucester does. spread the word about our incredible range of guests and subject. And until next time, goodbye from all of us at Goldstone.